I'll go ahead and say, while we're waiting for the slides to come up, and I'll save some time, that do have a financial commercial interest relevant to this presentation during the past 12 months, royalties from a commercial entity, Oxford University Press. Many products and services provided by transnational corporations are useful in public health and of personal benefit. On the other hand, some operations, products, services, practices, and policies, some corporations have deleterious effects on health, on healthcare, the environment, and democracy. I'm going to give some examples of deleterious influence of corporate practices on health and democracy, and then identify some suggestions for needed reforms in the global governance of corporations. I know that to many, what I have to say today may be new perspective, may be difficult to accept, and some of you may disagree. But that's okay, because we've had a lifetime of being inundated by a different perspective. Although after hearing some of the previous speakers, it may not be so new. It's kind of sounding like we're in a four-part harmony choir, I think. So I'm going to begin with some reminders just of some environmental cases that resulted from practices of transnational corporations and extractive industries. Some are very familiar to you, but of course we all know about what happened with the Gulf of Mexico deepwater drilling incident. But prior to that, BP's safety record was already marred. In the 1990s, BP was fined $1.7 million for burning polluted gases at its Ohio refinery. 2006, one of their pipelines spilled in the Prudhoe Bay oil field, and they had to spend $250 million in a new pipeline. And in 2009, OSHA fined them $87 million for operations at their Texas refinery related to the explosion in 2005. And they also pled guilty for violating the Clean Air Act at that refinery and paid a $50 million fine. I'm not going to mention all of these, but after a lawsuit was filed against Chevron for alleged pollution in the Ecuadorian rainforest, Chevron fought for 10 years to get the case transferred to trial in Ecuador and agreed to submit to the Ecuadorian court and be held by its ruling. But after 7 years there, they began to fight to have it removed from the trial in Ecuadorian courts. So this kind of action is somewhat typical and illustrates how transnationals appear to shop around for court venues as a delaying tactic or to find more favorable venues. Disagreements with communities where extractive industry sites are located sometimes raise human rights concerns. And there are a couple that I want to give examples. The U.S. Court of Appeals relieved Shell of its liability for alleged complicity in human rights abuses in Nigeria. Significantly, they ruled that corporations cannot be sued under the Alien Torts Act for human rights abuses, a U.S. federal law that allows for suits for violations of international law, including serious human rights abuses. In another case that I didn't list here, but in the Sudan, the plaintiffs were required to prove that an oil company operating in southern Sudan had wanted the abuses to occur that had been committed by government forces with the specific material assistance of that corporation. So the plaintiffs would have to prove that that corporation wanted those abuses to occur, not that they assisted in them. So while norms of conduct are prescribed by international law does not deal directly with corporate liability, but typically relies on the domestic law. However, in these cases that I've given here suggest that even domestic laws, such as our ACTA, may be ineffective in holding corporations accountable. I'm going to give some examples. Of course, Dave has already presented some great examples of this, but some analysts believe that the corporations that in the food and beverage industry are promoting this global transition that he's described to this diet high in fat, sodium and sugar, and they're following essentially the same playbook that the tobacco industry has played to forward its agenda. And a couple examples of this playbook are the industry associations and private public partnerships as examples. Industry associations wield influence through lobbying and election campaign contributions in order to reduce competitive pressures and to establish standards for itself. And one example of this was that the U.S. sugar industry in the United States applied a political pressure to the government to downgrade WHO standards related to sweeteners. I want to point out a couple at the bottom. The Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition is an association of food, retail, and pharmaceutical corporations. And the Global Commitment to Action consists of 11 food and non-alcoholic beverage corporations that are focused on individual behaviors. Some transnationals tout the importance of them being part of partnerships with government agencies, health organizations, and scientists to set standards for product content, promote healthful behaviors, or to establish research standards. And this is being widely disseminated by one particular corporation at this time, including an article just a few months ago in the American Journal of Public Health. This kind of activity, this partnership, and the importance of those partnerships. Standards set by industry, though, are often voluntary. They're formed without objective scientific input, without transparency. They lack benchmarks, mandatory public reporting as a means for objective evaluation of compliance and impact. They don't include a penalty for not abiding by the standards, and they usually emphasize gradual incremental change, which is one of the tactics of the food and beverage industry. Another thing that I want to mention is that we're seeing the corporate influence through their foundations that have been set up based upon foundation corporate income. And those foundations are truly setting the global agenda for public health through the wealth that they've gained, through their investments in corporations, and they're forming partnerships with corporations. Many of those corporations are the ones that have very deleterious effects on the environment, from agriculture to the extractive industries. So the size and finances of corporations suggest their capacity to influence the global economy, the nation states, and democratic processes. Based on industry sources, there are about 82,000 transnational corporations with 810,000 foreign affiliates employing about 77 million people. Now, there's some other measures to look at this economic influence that foreign corporations can have. Foreign direct investment has been mentioned. That's when a company from one country makes an investment in a building, a factory, or acquires management interest in a company in another country. So the food and beverage industry in 2005-2007, their FDI was $40 billion. Currency transactions is another example of financial industry influence, and this ability of governments to intervene in foreign exchange markets to stabilize their currency and maintain fiscal autonomy is reduced by the scale and speed of this cross-border flow of financial capital, which you can see in this slide is extensive. The corporate share of government's costs decreased from 25% in 1950 to 7% in 2003. In 2004, the corporate income tax amounted to 8% of tax receipts versus 34% from personal income tax. Their effective tax rate was about 25% versus statutory rate of 35%. In 2002, the U.S. government lost $172 billion in revenue because corporations paid less than the statutory rate. So this loss of tax revenue means that there's fewer funds for public health and education and other infrastructure that human citizens have to bear, or those programs end up having to be cut. The annual expenditures of governments of Nigeria, Singapore, and Chile are less than $50 billion each, and that of India less than $225 billion. The annual revenue of Walmart is $408 billion, as you can see to the right of that slide, and their operating budget is about the size of those three countries. The benefits of the increased corporate globalized trade have not been distributed equitably across nor within countries, and the U.S. is one example of this. From 1974 to 2004, the real growth in income in the top 100% wealthiest of the population grew about 180%, while the lowest 1% grew 10%. Because nation states are economically dependent upon transnationals, these corporations can manipulate competition between nation states to gain favorable conditions for themselves. Thus, nation states are weakened in their ability to enforce the health, worker safety, and environmental laws. So sort of in summary then, that fines that are relatively small compared to the corporation's profits seem ineffective in controlling their practices. The application of international and some domestic laws are of limited effect in human rights protection, and they have enormous economic power. And they make limited contributions to their share of the tax cost, and through lobbying and contributions to political campaigns, they exert a disproportionate influence on democracy. So really quick, some recommendations for global governance to corporations. There are existing a number of United Nations agreements, such as the Global Compact, which is a 10-year-old voluntary non-binding set of regulations and codes, but without enforcement, but is to try to get corporations to follow 10 principles of human rights. And there are a number of other areas there in the United Nations that could be applied as well. The norms of responsibilities was just done away with because of corporate pressure on their nations. UN couldn't get those passed. Public health professionals need to guard against complicity with corporations by not allowing corporate enticements, either to the profession or personally, to blur the distinction between corporate and public health purposes. The goals and values of public health are fundamentally different from the goals of the corporation. One of the first things that public health professionals can do is to recognize that they may have been co-opted by the framing and the language of corporations. For example, when we use terminology that assigns human characteristics to corporations, such as the greed of that company, or being the responsible corporation, or don't demonize corporations. The fact is that corporations are not persons. They are legal fictions, only a piece of paper, and no court nor legislature has ever said that they are persons. So at the foundation of many public health issues is the influence of corporations, be that worker health, environmental health, food and safety, security, the rights of indigenous people, discrimination, women's health, housing, jobs, economic security, human rights, whatever that is, at the foundation is the corporation. So in my opinion, the power and influence of transnationals is the greatest single social determinant threat to contemporary global public health and democracy. Public health profession needs to unite with other organizations around the globe to redress the injustices that result from the practices and influence of the corporation. Thank you.